You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey everyone, Chris Lopez here, and welcome back to another episode. And today is actually our second series in talking about Roth IRAs. So this one, we're actually going to be talking about specifically on how to use a Roth to invest in real estate. Now, if you're not listening to the first episode, I'd highly recommend you go back there and listen to it. Even if you're someone like me who's really into personal finance and knows a lot more than the average bear, I learned a lot in that first episode. And it really builds into how to really stash some cash away into a Roth and actually go out there and buy some real estate. So my guest is Will Duffy again, who is a financial planner here in the Denver area, to come talk about using Roth to invest in real estate. Will, glad to have you back.
Hey, Chris, glad to be back, and can't wait to dive into this specifically with real estate. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I mentioned in the first episode that I'm so excited to kind of, I got connected with you and we started talking is that, you know, there's a lot of financial planners out there that do great jobs at what they do, but they kind of stick within a very narrow lane when it comes to retirement planning and investing, which is usually stocks and bonds type based, where you do a lot more of the creative stuff. I don't know if creative is the right word, but a lot more of the outside of the traditional stuff, which I love, which feeds into real estate and feeds into a lot more stuff. So this is going to be fun. So should I just start like firing questions away at you?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, you know, I think the way I want to start here, because I am very familiar with, a lot of our listeners are familiar with, the concept of using a self-directed IRA to go out there and invest in real estate. Now, I've never done that because from the research I've done, I've not been fans of all the extra rules and regulations with them. And then plus all the just the tax consequences down the roads of having to do required minimum distributions and a bunch of other stuff like that. So how does a Roth for real estate compare to a self-directed IRA? What are the parallels and what are the differences?
Yeah, so I'm gonna start out by making a bold statement, which is I would never recommend nor personally own real estate in a traditional IRA. And so I obviously didn't know that you had done this research personally in the past, but I 100% agree with you that to me it does not make sense for a myriad of reasons to own real estate in a traditional IRA. Now, with a Roth, the rules are changed. So to me, owning real estate in a Roth is a complete game changer. Some significant differences are going to be taxation. So let me mention this one. I'm guessing a lot of people, including you, Chris, and a lot of your listeners, maybe have dreams and aspirations of retiring before 65 to 70. Mm-hmm. Here's an issue. With a traditional IRA, if you want to retire early, say 50, 55, you can't take that money out without paying a penalty. That is not the case with a Roth. With a Roth, you can always take out your basis tax and penalty free. Very, very significant. And so if somebody does want to retire at 50 or 55 and they have a Roth, they're going to be able to do that. When it comes to the tax issue, in my opinion, owning real estate in a traditional IRA is making your tax problem worse. So you're essentially losing the depreciation by having the real estate inside of the IRA, number one. And number two—
What do you mean you're losing? Like you don't get to take the depreciation write off?
Correct. You do not get the depreciation write-off inside of the IRA.
I did not know that, or I did not remember that. Okay.
Yeah, and you've now made your appreciation ordinary income tax versus capital gains.
Yes.
So again, it's a bold statement, but I truly believe it and I practice it. I would never own real estate inside of a traditional IRA. With a Roth, you are essentially eliminating those tax problems. The appreciation is tax-free, the cash flow, the income is tax-free. And so to me, real estate and Roth go hand in hand.
So just to clarify, so if I own a piece of property or own investment property in a Roth, I can get the depreciation tax benefit on the property, or I still cannot?
You still cannot.
Okay.
But you don't need it. right? The purpose of the depreciation is to offset the taxes you're paying on the income. Well, you don't have any taxes on the income. It's all tax free.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So getting down into it, what type of account do I need for it? Because right now my Roths are my Roth, my wife's Roth, we have my Vanguard.
Okay.
I have not researched it, but I'm going to bet that Vanguard does not allow me to go buy real estate in my Roth.
You're exactly right. So what you're going to need is for IRAs, you're going to need a self-directed IRA. And a self-directed IRA is essentially going to allow you to do these real estate investments, to do these alternative investments as opposed to the traditional market-based stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. There are a lot of self-directed IRA custodians out there. They're very familiar with this space. They'll allow you to set up a Roth, no problem. Once you have that set up, you'll be able to make these investments inside of your Roth.
So I can go to, pretty much any, is it a good assumption to say anyone that does a self-directed IRA in the traditional sense, they should be able to do that for a Roth IRA as well?
Yeah, what I would look for is, I would look for a company, you know, that has good reviews. Maybe you know someone who's using that company and they enjoy using them. Honestly, for me, because I'm a numbers guy, fees factor in here. So I would look at how the fee schedule, you know, works out. I'll give you an example. Some self-directed IRA companies charge a flat rate. Others charge a percentage of assets. And so it could be, as you're more successful down the road, you end up paying more in fees by having somebody that charges a percentage of assets versus just a flat fee. But yes, pretty much any self-directed IRA custodian will be able to help you with this. And I want to talk about, I don't want to talk about this yet, but I want to talk about something that's known as checkbook control. And I want to talk about that after we talk about the 401k side.
So are you a custodian for self-directed IRAs?
I am not.
Okay. So yeah. You help people set up, but then you work with, I'm assuming, partners or vendors on that can do that.
Exactly. Okay. So I have existing relationships that I use based on the scenario, because certain custodians work better for certain situations and others and vice versa.
Yeah. Okay. So just to kind of go over a quick couple, I want to keep these parallels, because when I always say a self-directed IRA, I'm always thinking of a traditional IRA or like a self-directed 401k, something like that. So do all like the similar rules apply to where, you know, you can't use the money for your own benefit, you can't loan money to yourself? I forget all the exact rules, but...
Yeah. So what you're talking about are known as prohibited transactions. And it's important for everyone to know that these prohibited transactions do not just apply to self-directed IRAs. They apply to all IRAs. And so with a self-directed IRA, you are entering into the equation more freedom and flexibility. And so there's more of an emphasis put on those prohibited transactions because it's a lot easier for them to happen. But those are true of all traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs. And again, wording is important. And so moving forward, right now, we should start referring to it as a self-directed Roth versus a self-directed IRA, just to make a distinction between the two.
Great. So, and just to kind of highlight on those, you know, you can't use that money from a self-directed IRA where I go do fix and flip and I do the work myself. I have to hire a contractor.
Yeah, exactly right. So the IRA is it's an interesting vehicle. And this would apply to both a Roth and a traditional IRA. You essentially can't benefit yourself. You're already getting a benefit, which is tax deferral. And in the case of the Roth, you're getting tax-free gains. And so you can't double benefit. And so if you were to, you know, be the realtor on the sale of the house, you'd be getting a benefit from that. You'd be getting a commission. That's not allowed. That's a double benefit.
Oh.
If you were to do the work yourself, you're getting a benefit because you don't have to hire someone to do that. You're saving yourself money. That's a benefit. Even if you own a property in an IRA and you use it, that's a benefit because you were able to sleep in it or use it on a vacation or something. All of those are prohibited transactions, and you want to avoid prohibited transactions like the plague, because as soon as they happen, the entire IRA is deemed distributed in one lump sum.
And that's probably not good for taxes.
Not only is it not good for taxes, it's not good for your future because all those future gains would be gone.
So that brings up an interesting thing. So if I'm, let's say down the road, a couple years when I got enough cash stashed away in my Roth, I go out there and buy rental property for my own investment through a self-directed Roth. So I can't be an agent and take a commission, but do you know, can I be an agent and just not take a commission?
You know, I honestly don't know. That's not really my forte,
okay.
But my guess is that you could, because there is no benefit.
Okay.
But that would be something to research.
Yeah, I'm going to put that on the list because that just, I never even thought about that on the realtor side. I knew like on the fix and flip side, you can't do the, you know, you can't go swing a hammer.
Correct.
That's really interesting. Okay, so I'm kind of jumping over the place here, but you had mentioned something very important I agree with is that, you know, look out for what the fee structure is on these self-directed custodial products. Can you give us a general idea about what it would cost to set up one? Like just one of your preferred providers, kind of what's the general fee structure?
Yeah, so great question. And it's interesting, but I'm not saying this as a negative, but these self-directed custodians have to make money somehow.
Oh, yeah.
And so their list of fees is extensive. They're essentially going to charge a fee for everything. So to give an estimate is extremely difficult, if not impossible. But I would say to plan on spending a few hundred dollars on implementation and a few hundred dollars annually.
Which is really not that much.
It's not that much, but keep in mind, you know, if your wife has Roth money and you have Roth money, those are going to be separate accounts. Those are both going to have their own fees because you cannot combine IRA money. If you want them to do something for you, like a distribution or a Roth conversion, there's going to be fees attached to that as well.
Okay, but you can, let's just say, you know, I have a Roth, my wife has a Roth, we each have 50 grand in there. We'll keep them separate, but we can actually bring both the monies to go buy a property together, right?
You can, yes. And how that works is each IRA will own, in this example would be a Roth, each one would own a percentage of the property.
So yeah, let's just say 50-50.
Yeah, 50-50 is usually the cleanest because it's super, super easy, but that's exactly right. You can combine your money in order to buy property. And so there's really two ways to get real estate in a Roth quicker. One is combining money, for example, with your spouse. The other one is leverage. And so this is fascinating, but you can use leverage inside of a self-directed Roth.
I'm so glad you brought this up because this is what I actually want to dive into here because, you know, when I was researching self-directed IRAs a couple of years ago to kind of just understand them and see if that's something I wanted to use, and I'm talking traditional products there, you know, past the fees and taxes stuff, the thing that got me was, you know, you can't usually get as much leverage. A lot of times, you know, if you go through a bank, you're at least what I've seen, a 35 or 40% down payment, you know, which takes more cash to go buy a property. And, you know, generally speaking, the more you can leverage in real estate, the more wealth you'll create, assuming the market doesn't go crazy, but the more leverage equals the more profit. So what are the type of leverage I can use in self-directed Roths?
So in IRAs in general, whether it's traditional or Roth, this is important. You have to use what's called a non-recourse loan. And the reason for that is because the loan is actually going to the IRA or the Roth. It's not going to you personally. And so a non-recourse loan means they can't come after you personally if something happens. They actually have to go after the IRA or the Roth itself. And so that's important, is to make sure you always are using a non-recourse loan, and that will ensure that you're following the rules and that the debt or leverage that's inside of the account is not going to essentially ruin the whole thing.
Okay. And so this might really go down a rabbit hole and be too complex for a podcast. But have you run scenarios or the fact that, cool, I'm getting the benefit of the much better tax advantages if I buy real estate in there, it's going to be free and clear forever. How does that compare to then not being able to leverage up as much to buy the property? Have you run analyses on there to see, you know, because in my mind, it's all pros and cons. Hey, pros are tax-free. Con is I'm going to have to put more money down to buy a property. Not right or wrong. It's just pros, cons, and how they weigh out. Have you done any modeling or have any thoughts about that?
You know, I haven't done any modeling, but I also know that shopping around for non-recourse loans, you're going to find different opportunities. Some are better than others.
Okay.
And what I've seen is you can actually get close to, with a non-recourse loan in terms of rate and terms, you can actually get fairly close than going the conventional investment property route.
Really?
And again, we're not talking nomading here, right?
Yeah.
So in the investment property world, you're going to be looking at putting, you know, 20 to 25% down. Rates are obviously historically low. It's not going to be identical, but it's actually going to be pretty close. And so I believe that the tax benefits of the Roth are going to outweigh whatever would be lost in the difference there in the leverage.
Okay. And kind of what's, because, you know, until we started chatting a while ago, I never thought about putting real estate in the Roth. Part was just because, you know, getting all that money in there at once. But to me, my initial thought is, cool, I'm still buy properties outside of a Roth and then buy some properties in a Roth, and it's going to be a little bit more, I won't say diverse because you're both in real estate, but you've got different things going on. They're both pros and cons, which would be better 30 years down the road. So, and I'm not really asking a question. I'm just thinking out loud here with this.
That's okay. While we're on the topic, I think we need to talk about some acronyms. In my opinion, this is definitely too complicated for a podcast, but I think it also has to be stated. There is a tax. There is a special tax that can be triggered inside of a self-directed IRA or self-directed Roth. And that tax is known as unrelated business income tax. A lot of people refer to it as UBIT. There's two other acronyms which often get, you know, confusing. One of them is UBTI, which is different than UBIT. UBTI stands for unrelated business taxable income. And then there's UDFI, which stands for unrelated debt financed income. UBTI or UDFI are triggered in different ways. UDFI is triggered if you have debt inside of the IRA or Roth. So having a non-recourse loan would trigger this. UBTI is triggered if the government deems that you're running a business inside of your IRA or Roth. And so having a certain amount of properties could be deemed as running a business. If either one of those gets triggered, that leads to the tax, and the tax is called UBIT. Now, UBIT is not a good tax. The rates are the same as trust rates, which means it doesn't take very much income and you're in the top bracket. And so this is something that a lot, in my opinion, a lot of people that are recommending using self-directed IRAs don't talk about enough, because if you want to run numbers, you're going to quickly realize, well, with UBIT, this really doesn't make a lot of financial sense. So let's talk about a couple of things. Number one, one of the most unknown, small, esoteric, niche pieces of information that's just not known in the country. I'm very fortunate that someone shared this with me, is that UDFI, so that's triggered if you have debt inside of an IRA or a Roth, is not applicable in a self-directed 401k. So far, we've only talked about self-directed IRAs. You can have a self-directed 401k as well. Now, this is so unique. I still haven't met anyone that has one. I've met a lot of people that have self-directed IRAs. I haven't met anyone other than myself that has a self-directed 401k. And so you can actually—
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And so you can actually have non-recourse loan in a self-directed 401k, and you do not have unrelated business income tax. That is a huge benefit.
So tell me more about it, because I'm not following the details on here. So this unrelated business income tax, what impact does it have on me? So if I've got a, let's just say, a property in a self-directed Roth, and I've got a loan on there, a non-recourse loan, what type of taxes am I paying on that, if any?
Okay, so whether it's a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA, both of those vehicles are tax deferred, meaning there's no tax bills at the end of each year. In one of them, it's tax deferred that's going to be tax free. The other one is going to be tax deferred that you're going to pay taxes on the other end. Now, this tax I'm talking about, this UBIT tax, would be a tax that you actually would have to pay at the end of each year if you trigger one of these two things, which is you have debt or you have a business. And so essentially, the purpose of this tax is because the government looks at this as being an unfair advantage. So somebody who has a regular IRA that's invested in stock, bonds, and mutual funds, they can't just go lever up and all of a sudden have a ton more money in their IRA. But that's what you can do in the real estate side. And so because of that, the government has essentially tried to even the playing field by creating this tax.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. And it makes that's why I told you when you asked me on the last episode what my favorite strategy was. My favorite strategy is the 401k. There's way more benefits on the 401k side than there are on the IRA side. And this is a big one. If you want to use leverage in real estate, which I like to use, you will avoid this tax by doing it inside of a self-directed 401k versus a self-directed IRA.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never heard that. Not that I'm an expert on self-directed stuff. I'll admit that. But I've been to my fair share of classes in Google.
Yeah, you're not alone. I had never heard it either. And there's only one person in the country that I've ever heard talk about this. And he's the one that told me about it. And so maybe now there's two and maybe now three of us.
All right, we're in the club, or I'm in the club. So give me a little context here. So if I've got my self-directed Roth and I go out there and I buy, let's just say a $400,000 property and I put $100,000 down to keep the numbers simple. So I've got $300,000 of debt. What type of tax am I paying at the end of the year? Is it a significant amount or is it a couple bucks I'm not going to care about? Like,
well,
give me a range here.
That's a good question. And I wish I could give you a range, but I can't. And this brings us to something really fascinating, which is depreciation. So yes. I know I said depreciation was gone. Well, let's bring depreciation back into the picture. If you have this tax, you and your CPA and your accountant are going to have to file Form 990T. And 990T allows you to put depreciation on there to help you offset this tax. So while you're not necessarily getting the depreciation inside of the Roth, you can actually use the depreciation to help offset this tax. So this is actually a way to bring depreciation back into the picture inside of the Roth and the IRA world.
Okay, and you can do that on both a traditional self-directed and a Roth self-directed.
You can, absolutely.
Okay. So it sounds like the clear winner is to do a 401k,
yes.
Roth, or do you call it a self-directed 401k Roth?
Yes, yeah, self-directed 401k Roth. You got it.
Okay. It's like taking every acronym and putting them together there. So self-directed 401k Roth on here. I don't have to worry about this UBDIT. I probably butchered those letters, but
yeah.
The tax on leveraging up.
Yeah, the tax on leveraging up is called UDFI. And UDFI stands for unrelated debt financed income. So if you have income that is coming from debt financing, that triggers the actual tax, which is UBIT, which is unrelated business income tax.
Mm.
So yeah, it's a lot of acronyms. It's confusing. But the reality is you have to know and you really need to know all the details so you can make an informed decision. But you also need to know that there are people that have done the homework and there are ways around this. And so I just gave one of them, which is if you're on the 401k side, you avoid it completely. If you're on the IRA side, we can then bring depreciation in to help offset this tax.
Okay. So going back to kind of what we ended up in our first episode, where we talked about just the foundation of Roth, and I was using myself as a case study for my own knowledge, and because there's a lot of listeners thinking a similar boat. So I'm self-employed and I've got the ability to go out there and set up a retirement plan. It sounds like not only is the Roth the right way to go for the obvious tax reasons, but then doing a 401k Roth, a self-directed 401k Roth to not have these tax consequences for when I leverage up to buy properties.
Bingo, you got it.
Wow, okay. You got my gears turning my head on this. That was really interesting. So something else you talked about, and I'm loosely familiar with this term, is that, hey, when you're setting up a self-directed product, something to do with checkbook control.
Yeah, checkbook control is fascinating. So this is not for everyone. It's what I personally use. And I'll start by making this simple. When I make a real estate investment, in my IRA or my 401k, I write a check. I have a checkbook and I write a check. It's that simple. Anybody out there that's already been involved in the regular self-directed world is going to be blown away by that because they're used to all of the paperwork, the approval, the custodian, et cetera. So essentially, the government allows an IRA to own an LLC. And the government allows you, as the individual of the IRA, of individual retirement account, to be the manager of that LLC. And so as the manager of the LLC, you can write checks to make investments.
That's awesome.
It's phenomenal. The reason I like this is because of the control aspect, but also the simplicity. You know as well as everyone that when it comes to real estate, being able to pull the trigger quickly has a benefit, and keeping it simple has a benefit. And so there are specific custodians that specialize in checkbook control, and you actually need a bank account, right? So to have a checkbook, you have to have a checking account. And so this involves a custodian and a bank, and it's interesting, but very few banks even know about this or get it. And so very few banks in the country offer this. And so I have relationships around the country with custodians that do this and banks that do this, including one in Denver. And so for people that want to have this flexibility, this freedom, this control, having checkbook control is the way to go.
Now, would you recommend that? It sounds like it'd be almost a double-edged sword, because if people write a check and they don't, you know, comply with all the rules, sounds like you have to make sure you know what you're doing if you want to have checkbook control, because I know it's a pain in the butt to go out there and submit requests to the custodian, but it's also a CYA.
Correct. And so, yeah, you're exactly right. You need to make sure you know what you're doing. The simple thing for you to realize as the end user is that the checks that come back in need to be made out to the LLC, essentially, and not to you personally. And the custodian that specializes in this that you're utilizing, they're the ones that are going to help you with the paperwork if necessary, the legalities, the complexities, et cetera.
Okay.
So that will help you cover yourself.
So I'm going to repeat this, make sure I understand it out here. So I've got my self-directed 401k Roth now, because a 401k route's the better way to go. And then within there, I go form an LLC that's owned by the self-directed 401k, and then me as a person or individual is the manager of the LLC, where I've got the ability to go make or, you know, buy deals and write checkbooks on behalf of LLC.
You got it.
Okay.
Yeah, and so most people are probably familiar with the term member-managed LLC.
Yes.
That's not what this is. This is actually a manager-managed LLC. So you're not a member, because that would violate the rules.
Oh, okay.
The IRA is the sole owner of the LLC. You are simply the manager of the LLC. And that's what gives you the ability as manager of the LLC to be able to write a check. And by the way, when I say write a check, you can also do a wire, et cetera. That's the flexibility that I'm talking about. But you can also write a physical check.
Interesting. Okay, so I've got a good understanding about the structure of the self-directed products for Roth now. Now, when it comes time to go out there and start buying real estate investments through the through my self-directed 401k, what's different when it comes to strategies? Like, is it a different strategy I'm following, or is it the same basic stuff? Hey, buy good rental properties, buy good flips. Like, where do things change besides, you know, the making sure you stay within the rules and compliance stuff we've talked about for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, here's what I would say. I would say it's important for anybody that wants to go down this path to come up with a game plan. And the first game plan has to be, how am I going to maximize the amount of money I can get into Roth? Because you can't buy the real estate until you have the money in the Roth. So that's step one. Map that out, set up whatever you need to set up in order to maximize that. Then, once you have the money and you're ready to start purchasing real estate, the strategies are going to be pretty much the same. The one difference is you need to make sure you have a good relationship for the non-recourse financing, because you're not going to be able to get that everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want that to hold you up. So make sure you have a good relationship on the non-recourse financing so that if you're financing, if you're using leverage, you'll be able to implement that without much delay. But other than that, the strategies are all going to be the same, and just realize that the tax benefits are very significant because you're doing it in a Roth.
Okay. So I like buying rental properties. I'm not a fix and flipper. That's just too much work for me and does not play to my strengths. So I go out here and, you know, my very loose strategy is when I have the equity in a property or enough cash built up or the combination of two to go out there and buy another property or to, you know, initially 1031 and go buy two or three properties. So let's say I get 100K built up in my Roth IRA or my self-directed 401K Roth. And I go out there, buy a property, and then 10 years down the road, you know, property's appreciated. I've got a lot of equity in there. So I'm getting a lower return on equity, which is one of the things I like to look at. I say, great, it's time to sell because I can go leverage up more and take the $200,000, $300,000 in there and go buy three or four properties or a small apartment building or something. So when it comes time to reposition that equity and sell my property, because I want to go out there and, you know, take one property and buy four properties. I go out there and I just sell it. The money stays in there. I don't need to worry about working with a 1031 QI. I don't have to worry about the 45-day time window or 100-day time window. I can just sell it, get the cash, and pay no capital gains on there.
Bingo, you got it. And the whole key is that all of this is going to take place inside of the Roth account.
Right.
That's important, right? So yes, the sale will happen. The proceeds will be paid directly to the Roth account and you are done. There's no tax on those gains. Your income was obviously going back in there. No qualified intermediary, no time limits. You can now go out at your leisure and find your next property.
It's really just that simple, huh?
It's that simple. The problem is, because everybody always likes to say, if it's simple, why isn't everybody doing it? The difficulty is how to get the money in there in the first place. And because people haven't figured that out, which I spent years figuring out, they don't even get to the step of realizing how simple it is.
Yeah. And so as you, because I know you've worked with a lot of clients on here and you've done a lot of research and done stuff yourself. Do you see a lot of clients like exclusively investing in their self-directed product? Or doing combination of buying stuff self-directed and buying stuff outside of there? Or does it just kind of depend on their situation, their assets?
You know, it's usually a combination. And so what people find when they start implementing these strategies is that there are limitations on the Roth side. And that's simply because that's just the way it is. The limitations are not as limited as people think, but there are limitations. And so what I tell people to do is max out what you can do personally on your Roth, which means, you know, are you single? Are you married? Can you do a 401k? Do you need to do something else? Just max out your situation, whatever that is, and then utilize that money for real estate. And then obviously you're going to have more than that. And so you do that outside and there's tax benefits either way.
Yeah. So going back to something you said where, you know, with the Roth, you can pull out your contributions, you know, before you're 59 and a half, no penalty, no taxes on there. So if I go out there, buy a property this year, my Roth, 10 years later, go out there, buy four or five properties by selling and doing all that stuff. And then, you know, 20 years from now, I'm like, cool, I've met my goals. I want to start retiring. I can just have the properties, but then start withdrawing cash from my Roth and get that out tax-free and penalty-free even if I'm 52?
Yeah, great question. So there's a term for a Roth, which is known as basis. And it's very similar to cost basis in real estate. And your basis in your Roth is the money that you contributed directly that you paid taxes on. Now, there's some five-year rules and there's some complexities that we can't get into today. But generally speaking, you can take out your basis tax-free and penalty-free at any time. So to use your example, you're 52, you would look back at how much you've personally contributed. This is not what the assets have grown to, but you've looked at what you personally contributed. And as you start taking distributions from that account, you are then taking out your basis. And you can go all the way up into your basis before you get to a 10% penalty. But if you do the planning right, from 52 to 59 and a half, you're taking out your basis. And from 59 and a half on, you're taking out your gains.
Because after 59 and a half, the basis doesn't matter because I've hit the age threshold.
You got it. That's the magic age. I don't know why, but yes, 59 and a half is a magic age to take out those gains without a penalty.
Okay, so if I've got $300,000 in contributions, I can take out up to $300,000 penalty and tax-free.
You got it.
Okay, I'm getting more excited about this real estate investing in Roth because it's a lot of benefits here.
I love it. And as you just mentioned, that's the importance of maxing it out for yourself is because you're increasing your basis. This is not about trying to hit a home run, right? This is about getting as much in it as you can because there's just multiple benefits. One is you can invest in real estate quicker. Two is you have more basis so that brings the time frame that you can retire before 59 and a half sooner and sooner and sooner.
So I see you really got the gears turning in my head. I've got it conceptually down. I hope our listeners follow our conversation as well. I'm going to marinate on this. I want to dig more into it, probably ask you more questions. I think our listeners have more questions too. What, any other things that I should have asked or that clients commonly ask you just so we can kind of get it all out there on the table?
You know, I think we covered it pretty extensively. Just to kind of recap and rehash on everything, there are differences between self-directed IRAs and self-directed 401ks. And so that's important to remember. There are differences in the self-directed custodians. You know, some are traditional custodians, some help with checkbook control, some are really familiar with the IRA space, some are familiar with the 401k space. And so really, coming up, like I said, with that game plan of where you want to go, what you can create, what you can build, all of this is really a puzzle and you got to put the puzzle pieces together. But once you have the puzzle together, you're smooth sailing.
Great. So question to wrap things up here, because I know we know we're talking about, you know, doing advanced investing techniques like this. You know, you got to have a financial team together. Just like you have a real estate team or whatever, you have a financial team. So where do you fit in the picture as far as helping people do this and what other people they need on their team to successfully execute this?
Yeah, great question. So where I fit in is helping with that blueprint, that game plan of figuring out in everybody's unique situation what they can do or can't do on the Roth side. And the goal is maximize how much they can get into Roth each year. And the entire team is going to be someone that has my knowledge. So a financial advisor with specific Roth knowledge. You're going to need a competent CPA or accountant or enrolled agent to essentially help with the tax side of things. And then that would be in addition to the real estate team.
Okay.
Three-legged stool, essentially.
Yeah. And I imagine not many financial advisors know this stuff about Roth and self-directed Roth.
You know, it's sad, but they don't. And the reason they don't is because they look at this as competition. They look at this as, if I recommend this or if I help a client with this, I'm not going to get his money under my management.
Oh.
And so they don't even look into it. But the reality is that real estate is a phenomenal asset class, one of the best performing asset classes in the history of the country. And I'm a fiduciary. And in my opinion, other fiduciaries should be honest and open with their clients and say, yeah, real estate should absolutely be a piece of the pie in someone's portfolio. And what I've done really personally first and now for clients is figured out how to have some Roth real estate in the picture.
Wonderful. So I know we've had other discussions, you know, not about Roth. You've got some other creative ways of that most financial planners don't. So we'll definitely have you back on the future, talk about those, or teach them local classes since you're local. So it's some more stuff to look forward to because I love talking about this stuff. Last question, how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, great question. So to find my book on Roths, which has a lot of great information about this, just head over to Amazon and just search for Roth IRA. My book usually comes up first or second. And then you can go to our website, for the book, which is Roths, plural. So Roths for the Rich, all spelled out, .com.
Great. And if you go up there on Amazon, you should see the book. And I can't remember if I said your full name on this episode, but it's Will Duffy, D-U-F-F-Y. Will, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.